Welcome to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast. Yes, it's 100% unscripted, 100% unrehearsed, 100% unedited, and 100% real. I'm your host, Mark A. Preston. And my guest today is somebody that, well, I've known for quite a long time in the industry, and he's the co-organizer of Take It Offline Conference, VP of Growth at local Mirando, and a regular speaker at search conferences. Please welcome Jerry White.
Thank you. Yeah, we call it Mirando Local now, but yeah.
Do you know what? Often I get people to introduce themselves so I don't mess up. Because half at time I can't pronounce what I'm reading.
You know, it's great. I am lucky that I work internationally a lot of the time. And the one great thing about it is I can never pronounce their names, but they always mispronounce Jerry. So it's amazing after they mispronounce my name repeatedly. So I don't feel quite as bad when I have no idea how to pronounce their names. I mean, having worked with Norwegian colleagues, with Spanish colleagues, with, you know, basically colleagues from around the world, trying to remember first names, last names, pronunciations is a huge challenge.
Wonderful. Well, for the people watching this or listening to this podcast who doesn't know who you are and doesn't know your background, could you give us like a whirlwind tour of when it was you started in the industry, how you started, and basically your story from then till now?
Yeah, it's been a long story. So I'm trying to remember all of it. There's been a few kind of bits and bobs around. So probably about the year 2000, I was at university. I had no idea what I was doing, but it turned out I could build websites, I could host websites. And so I started doing that. I learned actually a lot of the technical aspects of website development building. I didn't get very good at actually selling them, but I did get very good at building out commercial kind of websites. And I integrated Dreamweaver and payment gateways and all sorts of other bits like that for a long time. Then I found that I actually was a lecturer in web design and web development for a couple of years. Then I went and joined a local government who needed a website basically being built with them. I sort of helped project manage that. And from there, it kind of carried on. I joined the UK government, and helped with what was Direct Gov is now UK Gov. And I worked on search. That led me into SEO. Then joined an agency called Razorfish, which I was the analytics guy, but I was also helping a lot on like I say, SEO-related stuff because they didn't really have somebody there at the time. Then I moved on to basically heading up SEO at a large content house, and from there I then joined the BBC, then I joined an electronics company for a year, and then I joined an agency called PropellerNet, and then I joined Just Eat, and I think that's where a lot of people seem to know me from. It's quite interesting that I was stored in a lot of my friends' phones, professional industry colleagues, as Jerry White Just Eat, which is kind of not a good thing. And yeah, from there, I then joined another agency, and then I joined joined a Norwegian supermarket for a year. That was absolutely fantastic, growing a Norwegian supermarket internationally. Unfortunately, they didn't kind of carry on growing, and so my job being the growth guy was kind of cut short. And now I work for Mirador Local, which is a software as a service tool, SaaS tool. And we provide a tool which allows you to manage Google Business Places. I always want to call it Google My Business, but Google Business Places at scale. I've also written a book on Google Data Studio, which is now called Looker Studio. So it hasn't sold many copies recently. And what else have I done? And oh, yeah, you mentioned it, Take It Offline. I've been running a sort of conference which is focused on the community and the cultural aspects of it. Also kind of like introducing people to the right people. Last year, we had an incredible event out in Bulgaria. A couple of years before that, we had an awesome event in Amsterdam. And it's very much a case of getting the right people talking about the right subjects. Again, it's pretty much unscripted, but usually with a few prompts.
Wow. Now that is some story. But do you think that you mentioned there that you're known for working at Just Eat? Do you think working at a known brand suddenly propels an SEO's career?
It kind of does, yeah. Particularly if it's Google. I know a number of people who seem to have ex-Google or ex-something on their profile, and it does help them a lot. Basically, it gives them a status of having worked with one of the big ones. It gives them that kind of trust factor. And I know a lot of people kind of have ex-Google, and they cash in on it, and you know they didn't work there for 12 years. I kind of find that quite amusing. But I haven't worked at Just Eat now for, I think it's, when I leave, 2020, 4 or 5 years. And so it is kind of interesting that, you know, I kind of want to be known for other things, but I'm quite happy to be known for that. I mean, I also worked at the BBC for a bit, and that is also on my ex-BBC profile. So, you know, I've had a lot of clients over the years, including those.
Yeah. You mentioned that you worked on the government website. I'm going to say, I have to ask, how was that?
Actually, it was brilliant and also interesting. There's some stories I can't really tell, but my job was to help with on-site search. So how people use the site search to then find what they were looking for. And I think this is gave me a huge insight into how weird people search. So for instance, people searching for, they expected the site search to kind of come up with anything and everything. My favorite example of it was the fact that a lot of people search for the phrase will, because they want to make a will, they want to leave a will, they want to have will information. Government site search would come up with no results because it's something called a stop word, which meant that our search engine at the time would completely ignore it. So that was kind of interesting. And it was incredibly user-focused website at the time. So everything we did was very much around the user. But then we were also working with civil servants who didn't really think the internet was a thing back then almost. It was an annoyance as part rather than a core part of their job. So it's kind of interesting how through my career, the internet has gone from being almost an annoyance in the background to so dominant. But no, amazing people, super smart people. I'm still in touch with quite a few of them, actually, and they're all doing kind of amazing things. They all seem to have stuck with government or kind of charity-related work. But yeah.
Wonderful. You think that understanding how people search has really benefited your career and what, you know, because for me, unless you actually understand what's happening, how are you supposed to change things?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's everything's changing all the time, and people are more and more educated on how to search. But what's interesting is that when I was young, a few years ago, I felt like the search engines were very much you put text in, it would find a page with that text on it. Now we ask Google questions. We ask Google what happened last week. We do weird ways of searching. And what was kind of interesting was when I was working at the BBC, I had kind of access to what literally everybody was searching for. And whilst a lot of the time I was focused around the top search terms, which were things like Top Gear or The Archers or Doctor Who, when you kind of reverse it and take a look at what people are actually searching for at the long tail side of it, people were searching for very strange stuff. They would search for M1, accident. And these often were subsequent searches. So people almost have conversations with search engines, and seeing this relationship in the way in which multiple search queries don't make sense on their own, that kind of information really leads you to kind of understand how people actually use Google now. And the fact that Google understands all this is quite terrifying. I've done a lot of weird searches on Google where I thought, wow, Google was not supposed to understand that search based on what I put in then, but it knows what I've just been looking at, what I've just been watching, what I've just been doing. So it kind of inferred a lot of information before I kind of clicked send on the query that I typed in. I think Google's incredible, actually. I know people are slagging off a lot at the moment, and it's got worse, mainly because of the fact that it's prioritizing, let's say, untrustable resources more so than ever before. But the fact that it kind of understands and interprets queries as well as it does, I think truly is incredible based on my own experience of working with on-site search.
Yeah. Now, with the whole search environment and Google, is you touched upon there that basically it understands what's happening here and now. So when you said, you know, they're using searching a query, that something's just happened in the news and people search it and suddenly, but how do you see SEOs benefiting from that, because they can't predict what's going to happen, or can they?
No, you absolutely can't. I mean, you, I say you can't, but sometimes we shape it. Sometimes we know what's going to happen. Sometimes we can almost use digital PR and similar techniques. And if there is a big story, I mean, my favorite thing at the moment is the Fallout TV series, if you've seen it. But, oh, it's fantastic. If you're a nerdy computer game guy, are you a nerdy computer game guy?
No, to be honest with you, I don't get time to do any of that.
I know the feeling. So this film, this TV series that's just come out on Prime is so good. And so many people now are searching for things related to the TV series and the game. And now I'm seeing all of these people creating content proactively to try and cash in on it. There's so much content going up around the games, how to play the games, which games, the sequence, as well as if information around the TV series, the actors, who they should be. And you can see that basically this jumping on what's happening right now is really working for a lot of them, and it does work really well. I mean, I struggle with the fact that some of the newspapers push it so hard. I mean, I did a conference talk once when I talked about the fact that I can't remember which newspaper it was, but after the royal wedding, there were so many searches for Pippa Middleton's bum, and there were so many newspapers that had like thousands of articles around this. It was just insane just how much they were jumping on this one bit of sort of newsjacking the news story that had come up. I mean, when I was working at the BBC, we very proudly had only one article about it, and that was talking about the fact all the newspapers were talking about it, so we didn't really sort of say too much. But you know, cashing in on the news volume, the sort of search volume, is something that SEO people do. It's not normally something that I work on. Normally I sit in the sort of more tech and the product side of it rather than the kind of the newsjacking content side of it, but I do work with those teams quite closely.
All right, so all these people cashed in on creating all this content of what's happening here and now. Mm. How valuable is that content after the craze has finished?
Probably not that valuable at all, but most content doesn't get a huge amount of traffic. Normally it's a kind of static kind of amount. Now, where if you cash in on something that's happening here and now, the amount of traffic that you can get from Google Discover can be absolutely huge. And there's a number of companies out there that kind of work very much focused on Google Discover and Google, the sort of traffic from those kind of news articles. And the spikes that you see, if you look in Google Search Console sometimes, you'll see a huge spike of traffic coming into that one article just because it hits a kind of core point at the right time. So I think it's valuable for that instant. And hopefully it drives links, it can drive engagement, it can drive brand awareness. But it very rarely converts. It very rarely does much more than creates that spike of traffic. But that's actually important to a lot of companies. If you're trying to raise awareness of your brand and you can get people to come in on one particular page and you can demonstrate your brand to them. I mean, for Mirador Local, if we're jumping on top of trends and stories about what's happening in Google My Business or Google Business Places, and we get consistent traffic in that way, that leads to brand awareness. And then when they're choosing a tool, we will hopefully get in on that. So, yeah, I think it's important.
Right. So on your background, you say, is more on the technical side than that. Are you now in the local space? I'm just trying to gauge where you are now.
Yeah, so at the moment, I am very much working on a lot of local clients, but I'm still got my knowledge and background of doing things like hreflang. I actually was looking at a website the other day, and I managed to produce a bookmarklet that extracts all the hreflang because I couldn't figure out a way of doing it myself using the tools. And I was looking at a way of doing this at sort of scale, and I went, oh, I can just put in a bookmarklet and create something. So I do work a lot on international. I do work a lot on all sorts of other websites. And what's kind of interesting is a lot of the time when we're talking to our clients who for Mirador Local, they also have other things going on that's impacting them. And so, you know, there's conversations there. We don't really sell SEO services to most of our clients, but purely and simply because if they're referred over to us by an agency or they're referred over to us by an SEO company, we don't want to do that thing where many other tools have done, where they kind of go, okay, so we've got you for this. Now we'll try and sell you all the other services, because that's a dangerous game. And I don't think that the the people that refer clients to us will necessarily want it. But we do have a few that have come in through kind of different ways. So, you know, the conversations are there. And being a nerd, I always like to get my hands dirty. I do a little bit of freelance bits for some friends. I kind of look at stuff, and I also do conference talks. I go to people and speak. So keeping my hands in everything everywhere is always really interesting. So yeah, local space is kind of a bit of a core focus for me at the moment, but I'm not going to neglect everything else.
Yeah. Do you think it's important for SEOs to understand the wider scope of what's happening out there, rather than they just stuck in their own little tech bubble or local bubble or whatever? Is it important for those people to, even though they don't work in it, but to understand what's happening in the wider scope of things?
Yes and no. I strongly believe that you have to specialize a bit. I think that helps you a lot. I mean, when I was in previous roles, I kind of had a big focus on web performance, as in Google page speed type metrics. I've had a lot of focus on international. I've had a lot of focus on different areas. And I think if I specialize more and more in a particular area, that's fine, but I shouldn't neglect everything else. I think there's a lot of kind of cases where people are so focused on their one area, they don't realize the impact of all of the other aspects of SEO having on their particular, on the site or area that they're working on. I think there's a kind of classic thing, which if you're so focused on on-page technical, you think every change to the website is related to on-page technical. If you're obsessed with off-site, you think it's because the competitors have bought more links, or you've bought more links, or something like that. Or, you know, it's such a kind of interesting area that everybody is kind of hyper-focused on their one area. I think having a broader knowledge of everything, including paid, including social, I think is kind of key. I mean, one of the things that I think people neglect is the fact that whenever you do a search for a brand, almost the second sort of line of results is the brand's Twitter account, for instance, or X account it's now called. And I think making sure you understand how all the SERPs are put together and what can impact it is so important for all SEO people and digital marketers across. So I think one of the things that I do find interesting is the fact a lot of digital marketers don't really understand very much about SEO, and a lot of SEO people don't understand as much about digital marketing as they potentially could.
Right, but digital marketing can cover an awful lot of things. Mm. So how can SEOs start to get into understanding the whole digital marketing scope of the impact of what they're doing? Or, you know, if I did this, what impact over here will it have or not?
Yeah, I think the key part of it is understanding your analytics and understanding what all the other data and everything's happening with it all. I mean, I have to be honest, my ability with Google Analytics has dropped down considerably since the release of the latest Google Analytics. It's one of those things where I used to know GA backwards. I could kind of go, oh, this is interesting. I'll twist this around and have a look here and poke around there. The latest version, I'm usually pulling it out into Looker Studio to kind of do the same kind of investigation. So it is interesting that the data's still there. It's just the front end of it's changed. And I do use the front end, but I'm just not as fast with it as I used to be, which is frustrating. My point is that understanding all the different data sources, how they're coming in, what they really are. I mean, there's that classic case of the fact that people believe that their website gets 40% of their traffic from direct. And we all know that direct doesn't really account for that much at all, especially when it lands on a long page URL. It's understanding that actually these people have come in from a source that Google just doesn't know, so it's lumped it into the direct bucket. And I think the more that we understand the way in which all of these traffic sources combine, I mean, we often obsess with conversion rate, we often obsess with bounce rate, we obsess with some metrics, but understanding that if a user comes in on a page and has a good sort of user experience, then these metrics sometimes aren't as important as making sure that they are able to kind of return to the website. They have a good enough experience that they think in the future, if they see this website again, they trust, know, and want to kind of come back. My point is that I think that understanding like the full journey of a user, and I'm also include YouTube in that as well. I think that a lot of the time we don't look at the traffic going to the sites that we also kind of manage, like the YouTube's video sites and Twitter accounts and similar. So I think kind of looking at a full user journey is so important. And I think it really impacts the way we should work as an SEO in the space. So we understand that attribution isn't quite a linear funnel as we used to sort of basically talk about it. I think Google now call it kind of the messy middle almost, where people start here with kind of not really knowing they want to buy something, and then they sort of gain awareness of it, and then finally they purchase it, hopefully from you, after experiencing all the kind of the materials around that, sort of like the reviews and different sort of elements, to finally actually make a decision to purchase it from you.
Yeah, I think that even the Google search itself is so multidimensional now. You know, it's not just your 10 blue links anymore. You know, it's not just the three ads at top that turned into four and whatever, but it's got videos, it's got Twitter, it's got everything on it. And I think that looking at the landscape, you know, of looking at, well, how can I take as much of that audience as possible in all these different things? Because for me, I've always said that SEO is not just Google.
Agreed, 100% on that one. Yeah, yeah. My favorite example, weirdly enough, is nasi goreng, which is a Indonesian dish. And I've been using this example for many, many years. Since 2018, I remember the first time I spoke about it at a conference. And you search for nasi goreng, it's an Indonesian dish. And if you do a search for it, the top results are typically recipes. So you can't sell Just Eat into that particular space. If somebody's searching for nasi goreng as a takeaway, they're not going to just type nasi goreng. And often they do find that those top results will come up as being, like I say, recipes, almost six, seven of them. Then after that, you'll often get local results. So Google My Business type results. And then, you know, after that, you might get a frozen result. So it is kind of a very diverse makeup. And interspersed in that, of course, you'll get videos. And if you're on a mobile phone, it'll be a TikTok. If you're on a desktop, it'll be YouTube. Or again, mobile phones, YouTube Shorts is kind of creeping in there as well. So it's kind of interesting, as you say, if you look at the search results and you're seeing TikTok videos in there, TikTok therefore becomes part of your organic campaign. And even then, you know, if you're putting videos onto TikTok, you optimize it in such a way that people will be able to find it if they're searching for the particular dish. It's not about keyword stuffing, it's about understanding intent, journey, and all the other kind of key marketing elements. I think SEOs and social media have had an interesting relationship over the years. It's almost like a strange, we work this way, you work that way. But I think the more that we come together, the better it kind of works out.
Well, I think it's just getting your content in front of the right people wherever they look for it.
I agree. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think moving forward, you know, like SEOs are saying things are dramatically changing, but things have been changing all the time. I mean, we've always been adapting to change. And I think the people that don't adapt to change are the ones that's going to be left behind.
I completely agree with that. I think that the conversation SEO is dead is not so much SEO is dead, but SEO is always changing, always evolving. And I think as long as we kind of understand that, I mean, SGE at the moment, Google's search generative experience, is something which we don't know very much about, not because we can't learn about it, but because it's perpetually changing. Every time I think, oh, this is how it's going to look and this is what it's going to feel like, Google will potentially change it in a week or two. It's very much in a beta kind of state at the moment. And if you know anything about Google, it's the fact that Google can kill something and change something literally in days. It's kind of good fun. But that's what makes SEO fun. That's what makes digital marketing fun, is the fact that we can't just sit there and not learn. We have to be on top of it all.
Yeah. You mentioned SGE there. Now, like I said, nobody knows what's going to happen, but obviously there's a lot of talk about, well, it's going to ruin businesses because it's going to take all this traffic away, because it's going to answer everything itself. But me, with my logical head being on, and obviously Google can't put them in a position where it's going to dramatically lose a massive amount of revenue, right? So the way I think about it, it's more going to answer the very top of funnel stuff rather than, you know, like all the blog posts that gets written, you know, 20,000 times over, that kind of stuff, you know, whereas people further down the funnel, it's still going to give them, you know, what they need, because otherwise they won't make any money from ads.
I agree with you. I know full well that there's going to be a shift. There's going to be a change. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've got three different AI type of, what's the word for it? I've got you.com, I've got ChatGPT, and I've got Copilot also on my phone, just because I play with them all the time. That's how I learn. I kind of experience it where I'm sat in front of the television and I want to know about something, and I'll ask a different search engine a different time. I use the image creation tools. I use all sorts. I've even got a WhatsApp bot, which if somebody sends me a long WhatsApp message, like voice note too, I can just send it on just to kind of give me a quick summary, just to make my life a lot easier. So I do embrace the future. However, I am kind of conscious of the fact that search engines, Google, and these ChatGPT type things are all taking content written by people and then sort of summarizing and representing it back, often incorrectly. Weirdly enough, I actually was writing something on a Software 4 issue, which one of our clients had. And I kind of, as I was writing it down, I thought, what will ChatGPT say about it? And it got it completely wrong. It actually told me totally incorrect information about what Software 4 was. And as I'm reasonably expert in that, it made me realize just how bad all of these people Googling symptoms of their, you know, whatever illness they've got or something similar. If it's kind of creating bad information for me, the medical information and the other information that's probably presenting could be really bad. I mean, the classic case that if you ask Google how many legs a horse had, at one point it would tell everybody it had 6 legs was absolutely brilliant. So I think trusting and relying on Google to give us that perfect answer every time, all the time, is dangerous.
Yeah, I think that another thing is, for me, it's the sort of legality behind it. You know, if somebody's searching for a serious symptoms and Google tells them based on whatever's out there that
Reddit,
this needs to do, you need to do this, that, and the other, and it actually, you know, puts them in a really bad position, who's at fault? You know?
I agree. I mean, that classic case that loads of people were actually thinking that it was a good idea to drink bleach because Trump had told them drinking bleach will, and it actually hospitalized people. People were actually thinking it might be a good idea. It is concerning that the wrong information can get transposed and rewritten. And if we write stuff for April the 1st and suddenly we find out that there are spaghetti trees out there, according to Google, it'll be absolutely fantastic from our side. But from a user point of view, trusting the information is critical.
Do you think there's the normal Google user outside of the SEO space has less trust on what's actually being published these days?
I think they've got more trust. This is the interesting part. I've had people tell me, oh, but it's on the internet. I Googled it, and this is what it says. It must be true. And I'm sort of sitting there thinking, you realize that I can put stuff on the internet that's not true. I can write a blog post about this particular thing, and just because I've hit publish doesn't mean it's true. And I mean, we've had, you've been in the SEO world long enough, you've probably had a client saying, but this article written by this person says this. And you think to yourself, but you realize that person's got 2 years of experience or less, and they don't really fully understand what they're writing. They're just kind of creating an article based on a limited experience of one client, and this is what they did. My favorite thing at the moment, as I say, is hreflang. I've seen so much conflicting and incorrect information, and I have to kind of check myself whenever I give advice to clients on that one. It's interesting that everything out there is contradictory, because different people have different experiences and they're only writing from what they've kind of learned and seen. So it's very much based on that. But like I say, my mum would probably Google something and assume that something written on a particular website will be 100% correct because it's the internet.
Yeah. Do you think there is a solution behind fact on the internet?
No, not really. I mean, I like I said, I use trusted sources. If I'm looking for a medical information, I will go to like a particular website that has trusted, well-written medical information. I mean, the NHS isn't particularly great, but it's a good start. Boots has got some good information. And because these are written in such a way that the legality means they have to be factually correct is absolutely brilliant. But I'm not going to lie, if I've got a cold and somebody on TikTok says drink whiskey, lemon and hot water, you know, there's a good chance I'll think that's a great cure.
Yeah, I'm going to say that. I mean, TikTok has really dramatically excelled in the SEO space. You know, from, you know, there's a few individuals who's really pushed it. But from a business perspective, from a lead generation's perspective, have you personally seen a dramatic shift in that space?
I haven't myself, because most of my clients aren't in that area. But we've seen trends where something has gone viral on TikTok and the drive for it in a particular e-commerce shop has gone through the roof. I don't think I've got any clients that I'm working with actively at the moment that this has happened to, because that's just a different kind of case. But like I said, I am speaking to people where this has happened. So it kind of does drive demand. I hate influencers because I know too many of them. And I think people who are influencers on TikTok are, you know, they'll sell the grandma for a, you know, basically a bit of money. It's no, I'm saying big harsh, but there is kind of a lot of which are clearly driven by, hey, I'm going to talk about this great product and isn't it fantastic kind of thing. And I think it does work, just it's not my kind of area of marketing or expertise at the moment, but I do see it working. I'm trying to give an example where I think there was a guy who was talking about like trainers to wear and which shoes to wear. And I remember being kind of actually convinced by it and thinking, right, I'm going to go out and buy those hill walking shoes. I went out and they were sold out everywhere. And I had a chat with the sales guy in the shop and I sort of said, you know, what's happened? Almost, like, yeah, they'd literally been flying off the shelves for the last couple of days. We don't really quite know why. Like stuff. Yeah. Just down to probably that one or two reviews.
Yeah. I mean, stepping back from it, I mean, I admit, you know, going on TikTok is not something I regularly do. You know, it's for myself personally, but in my own mind, I see it as a way to get an audience to start searching for a certain thing online. So if you want to build up the authority of a certain page or a certain product or a certain brand, getting people to search like the brand and service or that kind of thing. I see that's where it sort of can really benefit from the whole SEO arena.
Yeah, there's areas which are clearly going to do quite well, but sometimes the ones that do well almost surprise you. A good example is the fact that I like coffee kind of route almost. So, I mean, I do love TikTok. I spend far too much time on it. I share TikTok videos with a number of friends repeatedly. My partner, she sends me Instagram reels all the time, which is often a TikTok, just the same thing, basically. So, you know, we share, we consume, we do it. And I started getting into coffee because I got a mocha pot and I was like, oh, how do I get the best coffee out of this? And so I went into that route. And yeah, I think quite quickly, I suddenly found myself following a couple of people who were very expert about it. And suddenly you kind of realize that they could build a brand around that very, very quickly. So if you have a brand, if you're a coffee person, or if you're a fitness person, or if you're something which people are looking into, you can start to build quite a brand presence on TikTok relatively quickly, as long as you're knowledgeable, consistent, entertaining, and have got the ability to deliver time and time again. But I think a lot of people struggle with that ability to deliver consistently for a long time on one given topic. And that's why the TikTokers who are kind of doing incredibly well and building up their own personal brand and a brand that they're kind of working with are doing very, very well.
Yeah. Now, you've worked on a variety of different brands in different industries over the years. Do you feel that the authority or the trust of a brand directly impacts the level of organic growth you can achieve?
Yeah, that's it. It's a shame for the small boys. The big boys, the big companies out there, they do tend to dominate a bit in that way. So, for instance, if I'm searching for a mobile phone case, I will look at like 3 or 4 results, and if they don't look trustworthy, they don't look reliable, they don't seem like a brand that I know, and the 4th result is Amazon, I'll click into Amazon and buy. And we've all seen like the rise and fall of so many brands that we knew, trusted, liked, purely because if you've got a bad experience with them once or twice, you might not kind of want to order from them again, and you're less likely to click from them. And I think Google's taking into account a lot more of these purchasing signals now than ever before. I mean, they basically were in a recent talk that Cindy Crum did, she kind of talked about the fact that these signals that we're presenting to Google are definitely being used as a way of evaluating kind of the search results. EEAT, the expertise, I can never remember what the EEAT stands for. Expertise, authority, trust, and the other one.
Experience,
thank you. I'm so getting so bad about acronyms. I think I'm aging. But basically, these kind of signals that we're looking at, I think that a lot of it the brands have in spades. I never doubt whether or not I'm going to get the product from Amazon. But if I buy it from a website that I don't know who they are, the contact information's vague, and all of those other kind of aspects, I will often not click into them again. I will kind of almost bypass them in the search results. So yeah, the big boys, the brand or the ones with authority have got those signals that people know and trust them, and so people keep going back to them. And it is a shame because it does make it expensive for smaller players to get to the market. And I think it's a shame that the internet isn't the great leveler that it kind of once was in that way.
Yeah. So what's your thoughts on people piggybacking off non-authority sites?
Yeah, I think it's not a bad shout at all. So, I mean, if you're selling something, selling on Amazon to kind of build up a market is not a bad shout at all. And if you're able to work with like the higher kind of, what's the word for it, authoritative sites to make sure that your brand and something experiences with them, then I think that works really well. I'm trying to think of examples like the it's the thing that was on Dragon's Den, that weird scrubbing duck. Oh, God, there's basically a sponge that somehow has turned into a massive international brand. And it was on Dragon's Den US at one point. But my point is that, you know, brands have been built on companies like Amazon, and then they've gone out on their own. I normally get nerdy and I start talking about companies like electronics cables companies that have gone from being no names, and then suddenly they're the best trusted ones on Amazon. Then they almost kind of go and say, actually, we're independent of Amazon. We've built our brand up sufficiently. So there is ways of doing that, but also kind of partnerships and things also kind of works really, really well as well. So, you know, it kind of works, but it's the strategy side of it is always an interesting challenge.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of just stripping it right back. Where is your audience?
Yeah.
Or who can you partner that share the same audience as you?
See, that sounds good in theory, and I, by the way, totally agree with that's what you should almost do at the start. But then it's owning that relationship with the brand. I mean, I'm going to go back to Just Eat now here, but at one point when I was working at Just Eat, we had a conversation with Google where they had a thing where you could basically order on Google and you would never have to almost hit the Just Eat site. And the problem there was the fact that the money that we would make on one order wasn't enough to actually want us to have that, especially when afterwards we would almost lose the relationship with the customer because we wouldn't be able to kind of retarget them with their weekly, hey, it's Friday, do you want a pizza? It's Tuesday, do you want a cheeky discount? And so developing the relationship with the customer is a core part of it. And if you're using a site like Amazon or somebody like that, and you don't have the ability to get the customer relationship right, I think that in itself is something which is something that has to be taken into the strategy at least.
Yeah, I think what we all trying to do is turn people into product and service searchers into searching our particular brand.
Yep.
You know, And that's with Just Eat. It's like, you know, that's it. You've got the apps on your phone. You've got, you search Just Eat when you want a takeaway delivered. You don't go on Google then and search, I want a takeaway, a Chinese. You know, it's that relationship you're building.
Yeah, I do find it quite sad now that the verb for kind of ordering a takeaway for a lot of my friends seems to be Deliveroo. I mean, they're London-centric, but, you know, whenever they're kind of going to order a takeaway, they use the verb Deliveroo. We're going to get Deliveroo, and I'm kind of thinking, no. I'd almost prefer you to kind of say Indian Chinese or you know, a curry or whatever, but Deliveroo, I don't like the fact they use that as a verb.
Yeah, I'm going to say, a few years ago, I thought, what about all the McDonald's and that having these, you know, deliveries and everything? And everyone was saying, no, that's never going to happen. And now you physically go into McDonald's and you can't get to the front of the queue because of all these delivery people.
I'm not going to slag off my old employer at all, but I'm going to be honest, I don't get that. I mean, I there's so much great choice out there. Why would anybody want to order a McDonald's on Just Eat? I don't really understand it. But I think that's a personal opinion. I have got two kids who love McDonald's, and they love kind of, you know, a cheeky drive-through, or, you know, when we're traveling around, I always find us kind of going there. But honestly, now if we go to a service station and they've got chopsticks, the noodle bar, that's their first choice now rather than McDonald's. But I get what you're saying completely. I was there when McDonald's first came on. In fact, I worked on the campaign pages for KFC particularly, and the coverage that we got for KFC being on Just Eat, it shocked me almost. I was sitting there thinking, but the coverage, the engagement, the amount of orders, it was a significant amount. And actually, I was really, really, really impressed by it. I mean, I worked hard to make it happen. Didn't mean I think it was necessarily going to happen. But yeah, it worked really, really well. And like I say, when I kind of think back to it, I was sort of in the same kind of area as you were, basically, that I thought that Just Eat would be very much focused on the smaller takeaways, not the McDonald's and the KFCs. But as you say, I go into a McDonald's now, and there's a queue around the outside the door of people with their bags just to kind of go onto the, you know, the delivery drivers, and it's a bizarre thing to me.
I mean, I started to then think of why. Well, there's an awful lot of people that can't get out. Maybe, you know, it means they've got a new baby or whatever. They can't, you know, can't do that. Or they've no transport to get to these places or all these. Then what? Once you start thinking the whys in everything, suddenly opens up different situations. Right. And it's same when you're working with businesses and understanding all the intricate whys, then suddenly it just like, whoa, this is a totally untapped market.
Yep. In content marketing, a lot of the time when we're talking about the page construction, the motivation as to why somebody would buy it should be absolutely critical. I mean, people will often start with kind of a keyword search, but the conversion part of it, CRO, it's very much a case of what can it be used for? And I think I got frustrated with one of my clients who, weirdly enough, went bust, but they couldn't figure out why Amazon would outrank them for their own product all the time. And I looked at their page, and it's like, you kind of describe it very basically by saying it is a Wi-Fi radio. And so it does, you know, so you can listen to internet stations. And then, you know, the Amazon version went into the fact that using Spotify, you can listen to podcasts and you can stream your favorite things shared by all of your family. You know, it basically explained it a much better way, had a great little video, explained who, what, why, and how. And of course, people would end up buying from it. And of course, Google would kind of almost prioritize that result, because people, we often go on a journey. We often start with a quick search of something, and then we kind of start to sort of search around it. Google has got this great feature called like people also asked, which means that, you know, the bottom of a page, you can see what people are doing as part of their journey. So use that information. I used to work at Propellernet when we had the and to the public. And that got sold, I know, to somebody. But it's kind of fascinating that that particular information out there, I mean, it was so useful in creating content to kind of truly satisfy somebody who searches for a key phrase. I'm trying to think of a key phrase at the moment of an example, but they don't want just the key phrase. They want a little bit of a journey through that page. And I think the product is a core part of that. When I was working at the Norwegian supermarket, I found that, you know, a lot of the times we linked together with the kind of the core information on the page was often very, very basic, but adding in like the uses and why we'd use it and then linking through to some of the recipes that be on that kind of relationship and the journey meant that the engagement on the site was far better. And we could see that people would actually end up buying far more bigger basket values, and it basically worked a lot better. Even if, interestingly, the conversion rate for that particular visit was lower, the actual overall visitor conversion value was much higher.
Yeah. Personally, I've seen a change in the SERPs where what information-based pages has now been replaced by category pages. You know, I mean, that for me, I've studied this a lot and it's happening a lot. And I think, is it just Google understanding better what the user actually wants rather than giving them some information about that thing they want?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, if Google detects a buyer intent, all you're going to see on the kind of results pages is going to be almost 80% going to be product listings and category products. And it's basically going to drop you into an e-commerce page almost every single time. And it is kind of interesting, as you say, that Google has gone from being, I mean, I am glad that the value of keyword stuffing pages at the top of a category page has gone, because that was the worst user experience ever. And the amount of times where I'd look at this clearly spammy kind of content that was dropped into the top of a page just to make sure that we capture that click. It was terrible user experience. And I'm surprised how well it worked in other countries, not in English, but in other countries for a long, long time. Because I was very much a case of take it all out, spammy stuff, just get rid of it. And then sometimes we'd do it and we would see organic traffic drop a bit. So I'd be like, okay, we're going to put it back in again, but we're going to do it correctly. We're going to do it right. And I've worked quite hard on making sure that the quality of content on these pages is good enough that it doesn't make me feel uncomfortable if I was a user landing on that page.
Right.
But yeah, I agree with you. Basically, Google's very much driven around intent now. And if the intent is to purchase, you're going to get dropped into e-commerce and product listings. And in fact, the listings on Google's own pages now really does dominate. I can't remember what I searched for recently, but literally all the first page was basically a product listing pages. It's getting quite almost like we're dropping into Amazon itself rather than into Google.
Mm. Yeah, but now you work a lot in the local space. How can businesses and SEOs start thinking about how they can use local as part of the strategy? Because I think a lot of people start thinking that's only for businesses like florists where you want to go through the front door. You know, so in the broader scheme of things, how can it be used as part of the strategy?
I think two things there. One of them is that you have to make sure that you're a very trusted and online business needs to kind of demonstrate that you've got things like an office, a phone number, and all like the key signals to ensure there's kind of a level of trust. Because if I looked at a website and it didn't have kind of a local presence, it didn't sort of say that it's based in Peterborough and these are the people, all of the kind of core things that we'd normally recommend for a local business, for a global international business or a national business, make sure these signals are there is really, really important. And if you do have a Google Business Place location, then, you know, make sure it's fully optimized. Make sure that you do take advantage of the fact that you can put all of the photos in, you can put the posts in, you can put the FAQs in, because the likelihood is that somebody will be within your kind of sort of core area. So it is something which I think a lot of companies do neglect a bit because they don't see it as being a core part of their strategy. The other part, of course, is that, you know, you just make sure that if you have got a local presence at all, so if you've got any ability to be local because of your services. I mean, for instance, Mirador Local, we've got a London office and a Leeds office, and we've also got a US office. That's only really a kind of very much a tiny sort of operation thing. It's a couple of people, basically. But what I'm getting at is we should make sure all of our offices kind of scream out that we are actually there and we are present and we have real people on the ground doing a job to make sure that it's not a scam site and it's not the kind of thing. And also it increases our ability to rank and it increases our ability to kind of be present if anybody searches in those core areas. And, you know, whilst not as many people, I don't know how many people search in the Leeds area, but our London area is a huge, huge market. So we make sure that, you know, we fully optimize for that.
Yeah. I think that it's what triggered me there. It's the trust aspect. It's not just to get ranked in that location. Yeah. It's part of the whole brand trust, you know, yeah. And I think that a lot of people dismiss it, thinking, well, it's not for us, we don't do anything. And literally you look at the profile and there's like two words on it, it hasn't been updated forever and, you know, and all these different things. But I think as a brand, your whole estate has to basically say what you're about and keep it updated.
Agreed, 100% agreed on that one. Everything, all the key stuff, VAT number, company details, all of those things. I will never buy from a company. I'll never put my credit card details into a company if I don't fully understand that they're a presence, they're actually a proper business, and they're a company that I want to work with. Because like I say, if I'm giving over my address, phone number, credit card details into a random company who I don't fully understand if they're a real company or not, that's a lot of personal information that can then be used in various different ways. Even if I'm not giving them my credit card information, I'm giving them too much information already. So yeah, very big on the kind of trust element.
Wonderful. Now, as time is rocking on, is there anything we haven't spoken about so far that you believe the audience really needs to hear?
I think that the key thing for basically the future of everybody at the moment is it's almost like not racing into it. I mean, learn about AI, learn about ChatGPT, learn about all of these things as much as possible. But please, please, for the love of anything, do not be the guy that kind of goes, I can write 100 articles a day on ChatGPT, publish them through my WordPress account and see what will happen. I mean, if you're going to do it, see what happens, but don't do it on your main site. Don't do it on a commercial site and don't be that person. And, you know, the core basics are going to still remain core basics. Understand how code works, understand JavaScript, understand how websites are truly put together. I mean, I still find that the more that we're going through, the more that we kind of expect web pages to be faster because everyone's on, like, you know, the super fast broadband, the more I'm out in the country trying to load up a small website from a business, and I'll discover that, you know, the website is not loading up because of the fact that they've got a 6 megabyte image that is actually only that big on the page. And yeah, I think I'm going into a full rant now, but basically core basics, make sure links aren't broken, make sure the website works, make sure it's fast, efficient, and works for you. Which I feel like we're actually starting to neglect now because we're so obsessed with the next generation TikTok, AI, whatever it is, the trend, that those key bits and pieces are kind of getting neglected again.
Yeah. And what conversations would you like to have with people and where can they find you?
Okay. So if you want to know more about Take It Offline, we're on Twitter. You kind of just search for Take It Offline Conference and we'll kind of come up. But the actual URL is offline take, which is kind of crazy. I would love to kind of get the Take It Offline, but that's an interesting one. Or go to takeitoffline.co.uk. If you want to learn more about Mirador Local, we'd love to kind of set up a demo, and that's mirador local.com. We have a great tool which basically allows you to scale up your Google Business Place Management at scale. And if you want to know more about me, find me on Twitter or X, as it's called, which is weirdly enough coming under Dergal, which is Dergal, and find me on LinkedIn as well. You can just search for me as Jerry White SEO. I used to rank number one for UK sexiest SEO, but I no longer rank for that. I think that was more of a test to just kind of irritate a friend of mine, but I decided that nobody was searching for that, so I didn't need to do that anymore.
Well, on that note, Jerry, many thanks for joining me today. You've been listening to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast with me, Mark A. Preston. Join us next time as I interview more top SEO professionals.